And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Graham Hart Show here on Renegade Broadcasting. Welcome to the show. Tonight, my guest has been an inspiration to me and many, many thousands around the world from the moment they discover his work. He is quite simply the hardest working activist I've ever come across, and his knowledge of present day trends and historical fact are second to none. Author, filmmaker, public speaker at events all over the world, and a regular commentator on Middle East affairs on Press TV. It's a huge welcome to my very special guest tonight, Max Egan. Good evening, Max. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Grant. Thanks for having me on, brother. Thank you for a wonderful introduction.
Oh, my pleasure, my friend. Max, I really don't know where to start, my friend. Now, ever since I discovered your work, it's been one hell of a ride. Wherever I seem to go, you've taken me there, especially with Deprogramming the Collective. That out of that film, for me, I put it up on Facebook many, many times to people. Go to 41 minutes on Deprogramming the Collective, and you do a little piece there on Gaza, how it came about, how Israel came about, the Khazars, and also I'll never forget the words you said, well, maybe we're not getting the truth about World War II. And from that moment on, I started looking into it, because World War II history is really interesting for me. And what I've discovered, Max, since then has just been unbelievable, and it continues to this day. So thank you so much for that. After being
My pleasure, Graham. It really is a huge rabbit hole that it opens up, just the topic of World War II. It really takes you to places that a lot of people simply don't want to go.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I ended up understanding the Middle East for the first time. It then took me on to the Holocaust and then World War II. I went back to World War I. Then I went back to the Khazars and how it all came about. And it's just a remarkable 5 minutes that just went, Jesus Christ, where do I go from here? Well, where I went, Max, I went to PIR and God bless them. They didn't like my take on talking about the Jews. It was a subconscious thing, actually. I didn't even know I was doing it, but I was learning so much about it that it came about that I was subconsciously over 3 weeks talking so much about Jewish influence that I ended up getting fired, which is fine. So I came here, and which is very interesting, Max, because when I came here, I discovered a different viewpoint on a couple of subjects that I've never really looked at before. And one of them was religion, and the second one was pro-white. In other words, the genocide of the white people. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, look, the genocide of the white people, yeah, it's happening, but it's really the genocide of all peoples. It's not just the white races. It's basically merging all the races together, most especially the races of Europe. I mean, not in the third world, of course, but it's the genocide of the European peoples. You know, they've outlived their usefulness as far as the global agenda goes. And these, all these countries there remaining in their autonomous state. I mean, this is not really going to help with the control grid. So, yeah, I mean, it's happening. There's a certain element of white supremacism in a lot of the people that are addressing the issue, but, it is a real issue. It is happening. I mean, white races have been convinced not to breed for a long time. You know, over the years, we've had all this population control, overpopulation, all this sort of stuff's been presented on us. So even the decline of children now with the white races is very difficult for the white races to, recover. They are on the decline now simply because of the lack of children that they're bringing into the equation, you know. Yeah. We've gone to a point now where we're kind of going backwards. We've got a plane coming over here in a sec, Graham, so I'm just going to mute my mic for a second while you talk and we won't disturb the listeners.
Oh, that's okay. I found the pro-white thing very interesting. I do agree with you entirely, Max, on white supremacism. I listened to some stuff and I was quite shocked, and they're quite intelligent people that I've listened to, but I'm all for supporting the genocide of the white race. I do think it's happening. We're down to 8% now of the world's population. It's been talked about. I found a piece of film last night, from 1975, by a guy called Ben Klassen, who was trying to organize a new religion called the Creator's Religion, where he was trying to protect the white race. And there's some very historical points in there that I found, you know, of great interest. But I did find that he was very white supremacist in some of his rhetoric. I didn't like the way he was describing other cultures. But it's
that's the problem with it, is that there's a certain amount of animosity directed at other races. I think it's necessary to preserve all races. I mean, I'd like to see the white race preserved. Of course, I'm white. But I don't wish to vilify any other race. I mean, I love the diversity on this earth. I love the diversity of the races. I love the fact that there are different colored people. There are, you know, white people, black people, pink people, you know, yellow people. I mean, it's fantastic that we have all this diversity, and I would not like to see any of the races exterminated or wiped out. Of course, we're seeing it with the Australian Aboriginal and stuff anyway, so there's a certain amount of genocide that is going on that isn't just directed at white people. But again, there is a definite effort to reshape Europe. And when you look at the reshaping of Europe, you can determine this as being an attempt to exterminate the white races. Really, in a way, as I said, according to the control grid, you could see that the white people have kind of outlived their usefulness in a way. And, they're not really needed for the future that's planned. But, we've got to stop vilifying other races, because that really just promotes your own genocide, really. I mean, if you're a white person and you're being supremacist about this and, you know, vilifying other races, well, that just kind of makes them hate you. They don't want to really work to preserve you much either. I mean, I know a lot of black people and a lot of Arabic people who would like to see the white race preserved. They don't have a problem with their white friends. They don't have a problem with me or anything like that. They may have a problem with Western governments, but again, it isn't the white people. This is like looking at Israel and saying you've got a problem with all Jewish people because of the actions of the Israeli government. I mean, the Jewish people are programmed. A lot of the people in the white countries are programmed as well. So they're programmed to follow these certain trends and patterns and support their governments and believe that they're the most, you know, sound people on earth. You know, we're always right. Whatever country you belong to, you're always right according to your government. So, you know, we've got this national supremacism instilled into every country on earth. I think we need to put it all down and realize that we are one human family. Personally, I wouldn't really care if all the races bred myself. It's not an issue for me. But when you look at it nationalistically and politically, you know, if you look at the world as a political entity and a national entity, well, yeah, then there's a problem. You know, there's a problem in the way the system is run now, that any race would be removed because, the way the world's run. But, you know, if we could get rid of this system, if you had a place like what you see in that old French movie, The Green Beautiful, where it was just one big human family, I don't think it would matter if we all interbred. You know, it's the system that is the problem, not really the national pride that people have, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I would also go back to your first point, Max, that you do like to enjoy other cultures. Very much so. I'm the same. You know, you should be able to go to Italy and enjoy Italian culture, or wherever you are in the world, you should be able to enjoy those cultures, because that's what makes the people. But if they are, as was happening in Europe now, with this mass immigration of dark skinned people, there is, or seems to me to be, an agenda to wipe the white race from the planet.
Well, there is. Well, to reshape Europe. And if you look at the Kalergi plan, it's another Jewish plan put out in 1932 or 1938, back in the 1930s. It's on my website. If you scroll down, if you go to thecrowhouse.com, my website, scroll down the homepage, you'll get to a section that says essential reading, and you'll see the Kalergi plan there, which is a plan that was written in the 1930s, which outlines the genocide of the peoples of Europe via mass migration. It's all put in place back in the 1930s. They put it out there and they tell you exactly what they're doing. So, yeah, I mean, it is happening. It is happening all over the world. I mean, you can see it even in Australia. I mean, the white races are being exterminated, but I mean, the whole country is being exterminated in Australia. We've got a very low population, and with the amount of mining that's coming in there, I mean, these people are really, really facing a very, very difficult future. And over a period of time, you'll see all of this sort of gone as well. So, and America, it's being done economically. And America's, you know, you've had this multiculturalism come there, so it's all kind of interbred anyway. So, I mean, the plan is to create, you know, two races. One is the Jews and one is the Goyim. That is the plan. Yeah. And it sort of begins with the the merging of all the races of Europe. But you've got to understand, you're sending these Arabic cultures in there to breed with the white people in the same process. You're wiping out these Arabic races as well. You're creating an entirely new race of completely interbred people from all different cultures. So it isn't just the extermination of the white race. It's the extermination of all races who are not Jewish, basically.
Yeah, it's a very,
that's the plan.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Max. It is looking to that. I mean, and another thing with all these people coming into Europe with the mass migration now, I'm sure you hear as well, you know, they're all coming into this country. What person wants to leave home, Max? Who wants to be forced out of their homes? I mean, I live in Cornwall, as you know, where we're supposed to be the poorest area in Europe, allegedly. But whatever, there's peace here. I don't want to leave Cornwall, no matter how poor it gets. So why would these people want to leave, you know, Syria, Libya, and all the countries that are under bombardment from the New World Order by way of war?
Well, exactly. That's why they want to leave, because they're under bombardment. I mean, we're going bombing the hell out of these countries, and we're driving them into Europe. You know, so it's been all done by design. It's been all planned. If you want to stop the influx of migrants into Europe, take control of your government and get them to stop bombing all the kids in Syria and tell them to stop bombing Yemen and stop bombing everywhere else they're bombing, you know. I mean, that's what's causing it. But it's all been done by design. I mean, a lot of the people that are coming into Europe, they aren't even refugees. These are people just coming through Sudan and coming up out of Africa. A lot of them aren't even Arabic. A lot of them are just Negroes and stuff. So, you know, and interesting, when they took out Gaddafi said, if you destroy Libya, then Europe will be flooded with refugees and flooded with migrants within 5 years. That's what he said. You know, it was his prediction, because he said, Libya is the catcher's mitt. We catch all of the refugees who come up through Africa, who all want to get to Europe. They all come to Libya and they find a life in Libya. And if you destroy Libya, then they're all going to go straight through to Europe. And that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, it was a prophecy and it was spot on, you know.
Yes, I discovered Muammar Gaddafi about, I think it was about just a couple of months ago, actually, Max. I thought to myself, you know, there's go in and do your own research for a change. Go and look at the, because everything's a 180. Everything's the complete opposite. And I thought, well, there's one guy that I've not really looked at, Gaddafi. Just as I was beginning my awakening about 4.5 years ago, Gaddafi's head was being kicked around the desert like a football. And I thought, well, let's go and have a look at this, because everything they tell us is wrong. And what I discovered about this man was truly remarkable. He gave everyone...
Oh, yeah.
He gave everyone...
No, go on, please.
He gave everyone a car, he paid 50% towards the house. And, of course, the big thing was that he removed the Jewish bank, and he made usury totally against the law. It was unlawful to use usury. And he did everything, and then in 1970, there was a bloodless coup in 1969, and then in 1979, he stepped back and let the people run the country, which is quite incredible. They ran the whole country by way of massive, like football fields size, community halls, where the people of each area would decide what sort of policy they wanted to live under. But they decided it in themselves, and Gaddafi stepped back, and he was no longer in power at all, and he was just like a figurehead. I just found that astounding.
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And if you were a new couple that were getting married, he would give you a home. If you you free medical attention as well. If you wanted to study overseas, he would pay for your study to go overseas and study. Incredible, absolutely incredible. The great man-made river that he constructed that provided water to most of Libya, one of the first things that the Americans bombed when they went in there, you know. And when you think of Hillary Clinton cackling on TV as Gaddafi was anally raped with a metal pipe live on television right before being brutally murdered in the most horrendous way, while he's lying there saying, why are you doing this to me? You know, and in the background, you see the white hats, you know, the white berets, the UN workers and the observers that were supposed to be in there and not involved in it all. They were pushing the whole thing on. This was a mercenary army of non-Libyans that went in there and completely overthrew this country and destabilized this country and got weapons pumped into them and then moved straight across to Syria. You know, these are all mercenaries. These are all Blackwater mercs and all UN people. I mean, this whole thing was staged. And the reason they did it was because they realized that even by imposing sanctions on Libya, it wouldn't work because Gaddafi had enough gold and silver reserves to run the country without joining the whole international monetary system. So he didn't need it at all. He could have freed the entire continent of Africa had he not been taken out. And he would have, and they were going to stop using the US dollar for trading. So that's why Hillary went in and took him out. She's a psychopath. She's a cold-blooded killer. She should be in jail. The fact that she's allowed to run for office in America without being arrested shows what a farce the American political system is. This woman is a career criminal. She's got so much blood on her hands. You know, the worst thing that could possibly happen to the world would be a psychopath, the absolute personification of the destruction of the divine feminine, like Satan in the flesh, get elected to office in the United States. This woman is an absolute abhorrent. She's an affront to all that it means to be human.
I totally agree. We've got him. We've got him. You know, that's all she could say. We got him, as if she captured the greatest terrorist in the world, when in fact he was the greatest.
We came, we saw, he died, and she was cackling her face off on television like this pure blood-curdling cackle, this psychopathic affront to humanity that she is, a disgrace to all that it means to be a woman.
Oh, she's one evil bitch, Max. There's no difference about, there's no no question about that at all. Of course, while we're there talking about the US elections coming up, what's your opinion on the opposite that is her most forerunner, Donald Trump?
Oh, he's a joke. He's a egomaniacal moron. I mean, he's a joke. He'd be just as bad as having Hillary Clinton in there. I mean, if they're going to vote for anyone, it should be Bernie Sanders, but he's not going to save the day either. I mean, you know, the problem is that anybody who gets in there who's going to do the right thing will probably get assassinated anyway. But I mean, Donald Trump, I mean, people with egos that size shouldn't be allowed to run for president. I mean, he's a moron. He's an absolute moron. What's he going to do? Build a wall around the country? That's a good thing to do, isn't it? He said that if there's another terrorist attack in the United States, he's prepared to waterboard everybody. And the whole country says, yeah, that's great. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, waterboard me. No worries, you know. Idiots. Unbelievable. Absolute idiots. Donald Trump. I mean, what a joke. It's like Spinal Tap. It's like the elections, the Spinal Tap version of elections. It really is.
I remember when he was first come, his name was put forward first, and I thought, you're having a bloody laugh here. This is outrageous. But now he's looked like the forerunner, Max.
Yeah, well, yep. Imagine having that hairdo in the Oval Office. Oh, my God.
Oh, I know. I've heard people say that the only thing you'll get with Trump is a slowing down. It won't be quite as fast if we was under the bitch Clinton. That's the only
thing. Yeah. That's probably about it. I mean, apparently there's millions of people going to the Bernie Sanders rallies, though. We're just not seeing any of it on TV. Of course, they'll just flip the machines, whatever they want anyway, so it doesn't really matter who the people vote for, I don't think.
Well, talking about voting, Max, as you know, we've got a UK referendum coming up. I believe it's a done deal. It's already fixed. The book is, we're quoting, 6-1 on. It was 3-1 before they got into gear. Now it's 6-1 from the day it was officially launched. It's being called the most important election ever for the people of the UK, and it's a done deal, isn't it?
They're always done deals. They're always done deals. I mean, you'll stay in the EU, I'd say, or if you do leave the EU, they'll use it as a way of collapsing the British economy or something, just to show what happens if you leave the EU. I mean, there's various ways they can play it, but I think it's already a foregone conclusion. They'll just say, yeah, we're staying in. That's the way we voted, you know. And it won't matter how you vote. They'll just say it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. If I'm looking around the world, Max, at various countries and how they're being, put into, you can't go nowhere. The worst country of fascism I'm seeing on the planet is your birth nation, Australia. What the hell is going on there, Max?
Yeah, well, they've really, really ramped it up in Australia. They really have. I mean, they've got a low enough population to do it. The people have already been disarmed. Absolute corruption, you know, 7 years jail if you protest a gas well or a mine or anything like that. You get more jail time than what you do for raping a woman. They can arrest anybody now just on spec. The police can just say that they don't like you, and that's it. That's all they need to arrest you. You don't have to be charged with anything. You don't go to court. You don't have any of that. So it doesn't matter whether you lose the name. It doesn't matter whether you know your way through the legal system, whether you've got the ability to defend yourself in court. I mean, I'm quite comfortable and quite confident that if I was arrested for anything and taken to court, I could fight my way through it. Yeah. I could get out of it by speaking the right language and addressing the judge in the right way. I could walk out of that courtroom a free man. But if I don't get a chance to go to court, if I'm simply arrested on suspicion of whatever the police want to say and thrown into a jail and I don't get to be charged with a crime or get to face my accusers, I don't have habeas corpus, I have no right to trial or anything like that, and they can hold me up to 5 years and then limit my movement severely, cancel my passport, cancel my bank accounts and all this sort of stuff just because they say so, then where do you go from there? That's open fascism. That's not even a semblance of government. That's pure tyranny. That's open fascism. That's Gestapo tactics, worse than Gestapo tactics. It's no longer any semblance of democracy. It's treason by the Prime Minister, treason by the Prime Ministers and the premiers of the states that have done this. I mean, the Premier of New South Wales who's enacted this legislation has committed treason. It's as simple as that. He's delegated powers to the police that they have no right to have. And this is in no way being done to protect the people. It's being done to promote and protect corporate corruption. And if the people of Australia don't stand up and call it, then the country is lost. It's as simple as that.
But will they do it, Max? I mean, you were warning about this with the bikie laws, what, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I told them this was where it was going. This was going to be used against everybody, and now it has been. They've actually rolled back those bikie laws now because they don't need them anymore.
Oh, right.
Because the legislation that's been put in place now covers all of that and more. Good. So, and it's not just for bikers. It's for anybody. I mean, anybody who speaks out against the government at all can be classed as a terrorist or whatever. Any dissent is being seen as questionable activity. Even people who are standing up and questioning their councils or whatever, the police are finding out who they are. They're going through their bank accounts, the tax department's getting onto them, everything they can, like anything they can cook up to make these people's lives miserable. People who are posting things on YouTube are getting raided in the middle of the night. There was one guy from an Australian activist who posted information about the Queensland police, I think, and he found his door being kicked down at 3 o'clock in the morning with the police investigating a domestic violence order. You know, his wife answered the door and said, "You've got the wrong house. We're all asleep. There's no domestic violence here." The police demanded she opened the door. She said she refused. Said, "There's no domestic violence. I've got children sleeping." So they demanded that she open the door. So she opened the main door. They kicked the screen door in, held her up against the main door, and said, "You're under arrest for obstruction," and then proceeded to ransack the house, terrorized the parents in front of the children. There was no even search for any perpetrator, no talk of domestic violence or anything like that. They simply used that as an excuse to come into the house. When she said, "No, there's no violence," they said, "Now you're guilty of obstruction," and they terrorized the family, took them to court and charged them with a crime. I mean, this is complete fabrication by the police. This is the police going in and terrorizing a family for absolutely no reason whatsoever, and it's being upheld by the incredibly corrupt Australian legal system. I mean, the judge, whatever judge presides over that case, needs to grab the police by the bloody scruff of the neck and bang his head against the wall, for God's sake. You know, if he doesn't uphold the people in this obstruction of justice that the police have carried out, then what sort of a legal system have we got? And if the legal system isn't to apply to the police and it isn't to apply to this war criminal prime minister we've got who's supporting the rogue state of Israel in their open war crimes that they're committing, then what law do we have? And if law is not to apply to these people, then there is no law on this earth. And that's what we need to recognize, the fact that there is no valid law on this earth because it doesn't apply to the criminals at the top who are destroying this planet and are destroying all of our countries, who are destroying the national security of Australia by allowing coal seam gas into the country and destroying the water table. Malcolm Turnbull is a war criminal. He's a treasonous traitor to his country, and he should be arrested, as should every police officer who is supporting the legislation that he's rolling out. All these people are treasonous criminals. It's ridiculous, and that's what's happened to Australia, and that's what's coming to other countries all around the world, and we're too politically correct about it. We've got organizations like Lock the Gate saying we need to petition the government. Screw the petition. Shove the petition up there where the sun don't shine. We don't need to petition them. We need to arrest them because they're criminals.
Yeah, that's the fact of the matter. Until people stand up and call it, we're never going to get anywhere. So that's what I'm promoting. Just stand up and call this thing for what it is. The world's run by criminals and psychopaths, and it's about time we called it and did something about it and stopped all this bullshit from continuing.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And is this happening in, rural Australia, Max, or is this happening as well as in the cities?
No, it's all over the country. It's happening mainly in New South Wales, which is sort of outdone Western Australia now as far as police state legislation goes. And, you know, New South Wales is kind of the hippie capital of Australia. It's where all the alternate people are. So that's why they've made it, you know, as bad as they can there to begin with, just so they can get rid of all the alternates, you know, get rid of anybody who's going to stand up against this system. So now people need to stand up more. They need to make noise. They really need to stand up and defy this legislation and stare this system in the face and stare it down. Hold these politicians and these corrupt criminal police officers accountable for their actions.
And when we talked about fracking, Max, you talk about standing up against them. You actually did that and stopped it.
Well, we stopped it at one well. It's a place called Bentley when we pointed out that it was a breach of national security. You know, like fracking, we're a spring-fed nation, and water is the stuff of life. Water is essential for security of our nation. Therefore, any threat to groundwater must be seen as a threat to national security. So can the government please provide us with the studies they did prior to letting this industry into the country, which can prove conclusively that this is 100% safe for groundwater? If they can't, can they show cause why they shouldn't be prosecuted for breaches of national security? Basically, is what we said. And they stopped that well within 1 week. They're trying to start it again now. And, you know, people have such short-term memories that, you know, if there isn't someone there to nudge them, they probably won't take that approach again because, you know, the amount of lithium they spray everywhere and the amount of, you know, people's short-term memories are just shot to pieces. They don't remember what happened last week, I don't think. You know, they're fed all these news, sensational news stories all the time, and they just forget what's going on. And they forget the action that they took a year or 2 years ago, so... but that's what we did, and that worked for that one way anyway.
Well, we'll pick that up on the what chemtrails are doing on the other side of the break, Max. Don't go away, folks. It's Max Egan here with Graham Hart on the Graham Hart Show on Renegade Broadcasting. Stay with us. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, with my guest tonight, Max Egan. Max, we were saying about short-term memory. How this has to be brought about, surely, by the chemtrails and the GM foods, but it is a serious problem that people just seem to forget, as you say.
Well, they do, you know, like people, they just don't remember what happened last week. You know, they might have an okay short-term memory for things that happened today, but like the things that happened last week or last month, they just forget. And I think a lot of it is the lithium that they spray in the skies. But then there's all sorts of talk about different processes that can cause that as well. I mean, even circumcision apparently affects the memory centers of the brain. So there's reasons why this is done as well. It makes people into nice, controllable little automatons. So there's all sorts of reasons why this is happening. But look, we're under attack from all sorts of areas. I mean, it's a spectrum attack, but the spraying in the skies, which is something that amazes me people are in denial of, you know, like you look up in the skies and they just go, oh, that's just normal jet exhaust. Well, hang on, they're not, because jets don't have exhaust. It's a jet motor. It doesn't have exhaust fumes. You know, contrast, supposed to be condensation. Now, condensation doesn't last. It doesn't spread out across the skies and cause a huge whiteout. You know, we don't find, you know, particles, metallic particles and all this weird stuff we're finding in the soils and stuff, you know, if it's just normal jet exhaust, you know. These things weren't doing this when I was a kid, so there's no reason they should be doing it now. Jet motors have not changed that much. So it's an amazing thing that people are in denial of it, but, you know, the spraying in the sky, the GM food, the electromagnetic soup that we're swimming in as well, you know, this Wi-Fi that we're swimming in now is doing incredibly damaging things to the system. You know, like everything on the earth, every frequency that nature puts out, all the natural frequencies on the earth are all, you know, nothing really higher than about 10 cycles, about 10 hertz, even if they go that high, you know, it's usually around about 7 or 8 cycles, you know. But we've got stuff that's in the billions of hertz, you know. We've got megahertz and terahertz and all sorts of stuff. So these are ultra-high frequencies that we're all swimming in, and we're electromagnetic beings. So we've got, you know, such an attack, such a bombardment. You know, the waves coming out of our televisions. I mean, everything. There's so many things they're doing to us. You know, toxins in the food, toxins in the water, toxins in the air, electromagnetic toxins. I mean, it's a full spectrum attack, and, you know, we need to recognize it. But like you say, the problem is that people can't remember things from one day to the next. They're kind of a little bit confused in their actions. People's minds are reasonably shot, and very often they don't know it. Fluoride is another reason for this. And even if fluoride isn't in the water in your country, just check what's in the supermarket food. You're going to find that there's fluoride in the salt. There's fluoride in a lot of the canned food. You know, there's fluoride that they put in everything. They may claim that we're doing the right thing by not putting it in your water, but they're putting it in everything else. So there's all sorts of reasons why people just aren't thinking too clearly and why it's so difficult for mankind to mount any type of response to what's happening, you know.
Absolutely. And there's also, as the last commercial said there about vaccines, Max. Excuse me. I had a run-in, with my local doctor about 3 weeks ago. My daughter, we've got this beautiful 2.5-year-old grandson, and, he's the happiest child I've ever seen. He's not had any vaccinations, none at all. I've never seen such a happy soul in my life. He just wants to kiss everyone and hug them and show you flowers. He's just so beautiful. And he had a little problem that he kept putting his hands over his ears. Well, you know, if you look around, my daughter sort of was just a little bit concerned, programmed to be concerned, I would say. And she took him to the doctor. And this is unbelievable, Max. She said, the doctor said, just right off the top of the head, well, you know, that's a sign, that could be a sign of autism. Now, that freaked my family out. My whole family was devastated, absolutely devastated for 24 hours until I realized that the only thing that was wrong with Piran was that he was too happy for the system.
That's the thing, eh? The vaccines destroy them. I mean, the vaccines destroy their immune system. It often causes their brains to swell. There's doctors in Michigan now that are refusing to vaccinate children. There's so much talk about it. Look at the movie Vaxxed that Robert De Niro just put out. Anybody who supports this ridiculously toxic industry needs to really look at it. I mean, think about it, folks. The health department demands that you list the ingredients on a candy bar before you can put it up for sale, but they don't list the ingredients on a vaccine. They don't have to. They're not required to. And see if you can get a sign, a waiver to say that he will take personal responsibility for any damage that's done to your child through the administration of this vaccine and see if he'll sign. And if he won't sign, then don't give these things to your children. These things do not prevent disease. They cause disease. They destroy the child's immune system. They are absolutely horrendous. They contain all sorts of fecal matter and dead animals and monkey brains. And, oh, my God, the stuff they put in there. Don't get these things anywhere near your children. Vaccinated children are the ones who carry the disease. These are the ones who mainly get ill. You know, the unvaccinated children don't get ill. And all this rubbish about, oh, you can't have your unvaccinated child around my vaccinated child because you may cause damage to it. Saying the vaccinations don't work. Shouldn't it be the other way around? That the unvaccinated child would be in danger from your vaccinated child who's carrying a disease but isn't getting sick from it? Really? I mean, this whole psychology that they use, I don't know how people can put that argument forth and think that they have a working brain. I really don't, you know. These vaccinations are absolutely horrendous, and there is so much evidence now that they are causing damage that people really, really need to think twice before vaccinating their children, and we need to start putting questions towards these criminal politicians about why they are ignoring all this research and forcing these poisons on our kids.
And if we put it out on the TV, Max, they would do so.
Well, they would if you put it out on the TV. It's amazing, that, isn't it?
Yes. If it came down the tube or they read it in the paper and it got the right sort of publicity, you know, they would go for it right away. This is just what amazes me. I seen a post from a friend a couple of days ago, baby not feeling well after his first vaccination. And I wrote, just check it out, my darling. Check it out. And then other people come along and make comments and say, oh, poor baby. They completely ignore what I say. They will not look. And it is an incredible dumbing down, Max. I heard you say once back a long time ago that the world is run by psychopaths, but we're 3% psychopaths who run this planet, 8% who are critical thinkers, and the rest are open to persuasion. But the dumbing down, I've noticed, I was dumbed down, Max, as I'm sure you were, although you were much more outside the system than I were. But I was dumbed down. I've seen my children dumbed down to an even more extent now and a further extent. And my grandchildren now are even worse. And it just goes on and on and on of making us more and more roll over.
Well, yes. I mean, it's the education system. The education system is designed to produce empty vessels. It's designed to produce, you know, historyless people, cultureless people, people who simply can't think for themselves. You know, a lot of the kids coming out through school these days, they don't know where butter comes from. They don't know where milk comes from. They don't know where honey comes from. They don't know the most basic things about life. All they do is know how to function as a corporate vessel, or know how to function in the machine, how to type or how to work some computer program. They don't know anything about life. And another really dangerous thing about what's coming out with the kids is that they don't remember a world before 9/11. They don't remember a pre-9/11 world. They don't believe a pre-totalitarian world. They don't know it. They haven't experienced a pre-9/11 world. They've got no recollection of what the world was like before the 9/11 attacks. They have no idea that we were once kind of free in a way. You know, they think that this is just the way it is, that the state has total control and that the state will look after every need that you have. And that's what the education system is done. I mean, that's what it's designed to do. That's what Common Core, Common Purpose, whatever it's called in England, is all about. It's designed to produce empty vessels who are completely dependent upon the system and are therefore can be trained to be very obedient and molded into whatever job you want to put them into when they leave school, because they leave school empty. There's nothing in there. There's no critical thinking going on in there. Nobody wants to think outside the box. Everybody's a winner. Everybody's got a gold star. Everybody thinks that they're special. Everybody thinks that the world should be laid out for them. A lot of kids come out of school and they start lording over their parents. They won't listen to anything their parents say. And if their parents try to tell them anything or exercise any sort of, you know, authority as a parent and maybe show them some life skills, they complain that, oh, I'm getting pushed into something I don't like and my parents are abusing me, and the government will happily supply them with a foster home where they can get a new plasma screen TV and everything they want, and they can go out and become sexually active at a young age and destroy their lives and get sucked in the system the way they want, you know. So, you know, it's all been done by design, the whole thing. You know, we just have to call it. I mean, this education system is ridiculous. The education system is responsible for so many of our problems. But, you know, you've got to look at it. It's a government-run education system, and it's producing stupid people. Well, you know, why would that be? Well, you know, the government gets what the government pays for. It wouldn't be producing stupid people if the government didn't want stupid people. That's why it's put all of these ridiculous things like Common Purpose in place, to produce stupid people. And what do the parents do about it? They just go along with it, or they petition their government. You know, petitions, you know, you're asking these people, will you please do the right thing? Will you please be a kinder slave master to me? Screw petitioning them. We need to arrest them. These people are criminals. We need to arrest them, get them out of power, just identify exactly what they are, which is criminal scumbags. And like I say, you know, there's no legal system. There's no valid legal system that can impose upon you, because they're imposing a legal system which they don't adhere to themselves. Yeah. And they're claiming to get the power to do so from us. But if I give you, how can I delegate a power to you that I don't have, Graham? How can I, if I can't lock you in a cage and beat you up, I don't have the right to do that. And your government, but you say you get your power from the people, and suddenly you've got the power to beat me up and lock me in a cage. Well, hang on, I haven't got that power to delegate to you, so how do you have that power? You've created that power out of thin air. You've got no right to that power. You are an abuser of the office that you hold by giving yourself powers that you have no right to have. And not only that, you're claiming to get that power from me, which is a bunch of bullshit. So let's just call this out for what it is. It's a scam. The whole thing's a scam. There's no authority. What there are managers of infrastructure who are all in abuse of the position that they hold, and we have to stand up and call it. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Even in my generation, you know, I've never realized until I woke up about, like I said, about 4.5, 5 years ago now. I didn't realize, Max, that they are our public trustees, and no one seems to know that. And you tell them, and as you say, the memory, they take it. I've got friends who get it on board, and then a week or two later, they're back talking about that the Tories are better than the Labour Party. You know, they just don't seem to remember that we have the power.
Yeah, you have a conversation with them. They go, wow, it's really, it really made a lot of sense. And they turn the television on, and then within an hour, they're lost. They're back in the Matrix. It's freaky.
Absolutely. It is freaky. I'm very frightening. I really, some days I feel good and I think, yeah, we're going to get out of this. And then other days I think, screw it. I've heard you say before, like Max, you've got no real say in it at the end. You know, we're approaching the end of our lives and, it doesn't really matter to us, but we're fighting for our children and our grandchildren. And they just don't seem to get it. I know my kids are switched on and they know what's going on and they're doing the best they can. But most people, I just find it's very depressing sometimes, I've got to say.
Well, it can be that way, you know. Like I said, I have no stake in the outcome in anything that I do.
That's what I was
saying. I have no attachment. I have no attachment to the outcome of anything. You know, if the human race destroys itself, it does. It's not my fault. You know, if the experiment doesn't work, well, it doesn't work. I'm sure consciousness will try another one. You know, I can just see the potential that we have, and I think that we have an opportunity here to make a better world. And really, when I can see what's coming down the pipe, I mean, I can't know the things I know and not say something about it. You know, I have a son, and I'd like my son to have a future, as you would like your kids to have a future. So I'm not going to sit idly by and just allow the world to be destroyed around me. That doesn't seem very logical.
No.
You've got to do what you can.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the biggest destructions that I've found, Max, since I've been over at Renegade, like I said, I discovered the pro-white thing, which I do support, because I support all, but I'm with you 100% that I support all cultures and nations around the world, but there does seem to be, as I say it in Europe, especially now, a real effort to wipe out the white race. I mean, hundreds of millions were wiped out in the Great Wars. But I lost my thread. The biggest thing, Max, that I've really come to discover over here is religion and the power that religion has had over our lives. Even if we're not, Christians, I've discovered things about the Bible. You know, there's things in the Bible the Bible is just so contradictory, it's unbelievable. Where Jesus says, if you get slapped across the cheek, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, if you get thumped across the face, then turn the other cheek and take a thump across that. And then in Luke 19:27, he says, for all those who don't want me to reign over them, bring them before me and slaughter them. Another one that comes to mind, love your enemy.
Yeah, well, that's a great idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
That's really been beneficial if you look at history, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure the Irish love the black and tans, Max.
Yeah. Let's love your enemy and turn the other cheek if they try to beat you up, and it's all good. Just it's okay, because when it gets really, really bad, when your back's to the wall and it looks like you're just about to be killed, Superman's going to come and he's going to save you, and all the bad guys are going to go to this big fiery pit and burn in hell forever and ever, you know? And you have to expect the world to get really bad, because, you know, that's the only time that you're going to be saved. But don't try to save yourself, because you can't. You're a sinner and you're already lost. You can only be saved if you do it in this book. And that's great. Yeah, let's do that. That's really been great for the world. And if you look at the fruit of that, well, you know, look around you. You know, it's interesting. You know, the Bible is one of the most integral parts of the control mechanism. And it's one of the hardest programs for people to break. You know, they can see the corruption all around them. Everything's been tainted. Everything has been corrupted. But this book has never been tainted. This book tells me exactly what I need to know. And this book will save everybody. I mean, it's ridiculous. This book was compiled by, you know, people in Rome, and it's a control grid. It's part of the control grid. And it's an integral part of the control grid. Now, I think all religion, you know, I don't agree with any religion. I really don't. I think all religion has a seed of supremacism at its core, because all religion tells you that this way is the right way. You've got to respect the other guys, but this way is the right way. So, you know, I don't really agree with any of it. I think that I have a great connection with my creator, and I don't need anybody else's doctrine to get in the way of it. I really don't. And I think that all people have that
if they could look within themselves and discover it and discover the power they really have, I think they would find that they are their own salvation and that these books are telling them that they're not and that they have to wait for someone else to come and save them and that they have to let the world get destroyed around them while that's happening. And personally, I think that's counterproductive. And I think the state that we're in today in the world is a direct result of these doctrines being pushed into the minds of the people.
And it's such a slow program, Max.
Oh, it is. It takes place over hundreds of years. A couple of thousands of years the Bible's been running. So, yeah, it's a very, very slow program, very gradual process, but very effective.
Absolutely. I watched this guy last night, Ben Klassen, Survival of the White Race, 1975 lecture. Like I said, his rhetoric was towards white supremacism, but I did find within that some interesting history that everything, the Roman Empire wiped out Carthage, I believe, and then they went back and wiped out the Jews in Israel. But the trouble is with these people, Max, they're all over the world, so they're still taking up positions of power. But the horseshit religion that has been fed to us, drip fed to us all our lives. We still, you know, I find my friends, I've always resisted it when I go to a funeral or a wedding to do the amen and this thing. And I think, screw this bullshit. You know, I'll just stand there quietly. But I see people doing it because they're just trying to be respectful. But if they've seen this horseshit that is in this book and the contradictions that are in this book, it's beyond belief. But it's, you know, hey, it's taken me 64 years to find out. And I'm sorry if you're, you know, if you're a Christian. I'm not sorry that you're offended. I'm just sorry that you're a Christian. But you've got to snap out of it, all you Bible loops. It really has blown my mind, Max, what this book has done, and all the religions, and they're all Jewish created.
Well, they all come from the source, and all the Abrahamic religions come from a similar source. So yeah, they can all be traced to that. Yeah, I don't do any religion, you know.
No,
I really don't. I think that they're all counterproductive. You know, if you really look at it, religion's been one of the leading causes of death in the world and in all history. So I think it's counterproductive. All of these things. Like I said, I have a great connection with the Creator, and I don't need any doctrine to get in the way of it. And even some of the discussions that I had with Muslims in Gaza and stuff, when I was telling them about my views, and they were saying to me, all of this stuff you talk about, this is all in the Quran. You're a Muslim. I know. And I'm saying, well, if I know all this stuff without reading the Quran, then why do I need the Quran to get in the way? You know, it wasn't the Quran channeled by Muhammad. It wasn't just channeled. So, because he had a direct connection to the Creator and he wrote it all down for you guys. Well, what about if I've got a direct connection to the Creator and I already know all this stuff as well, why do I need the Quran to get in the way?
Yeah.
Couldn't argue with me. You know, they quite respected my views. So,
yeah, it's all apparent,
man. There are some people who are quite tolerant about it. It's when people push their doctrines on others. But personally, I don't think anything that anybody's written in a book that you should really allow to affect your life too much. I think it's all about your personal experience, and it's about your personal connection, and it's about your personal creative potential. You know, everything about this system is designed to lead us away from that. So we've got to pay attention. We've got to rediscover ourselves, you know. Realize that we don't have to have a world like this at all. We don't have to do all this stuff. We don't have to be enslaved to this financial system. We don't have to fight all these wars. We don't have to support all these order followers. That's another problem, is all these order followers. What is this? What is all these order followers out there that are fighting all these wars and all these police that are doing all these terrible things, all this brutality we're seeing from the police? I mean, all the corruption that we get from government, that's one thing, but it's the people that carry out these orders. Why do you carry out these orders? You know, why do people just blindly do what they're told and suppress other people because someone in a suit told them to do it? Mm. You know, or do they think they're doing the right thing or something? Or I'm by beating these people up, I'm doing what it says on this piece of paper, therefore I'm lawful and I'm righteous and I'm just. Are they kidding themselves? And I think they are. You know, and I think one of the big problems we've got is order followers. It really is. And I think we've got to stop supporting order followers. I think we've got to stop being order followers. I think anybody who's listening to this, if you're an order follower, if you work in the police or the military or any of these jobs where you're following orders and your job is hurting people or raping the environment, then you need to quit your job and get a more ethical job. And if you're someone out there who is married to an order follower, if an order follower is your spouse, if you're married to a police officer or someone in the military or someone who's working for a mining company, you need to boycott them. You need to tell them to get another job, more ethical job, or to get another spouse. You need to make a stand for your children. You really do. We've got to stop supporting these people. That's going to be the only way that wakes them up, you know, because they need to step across the line and get onto the right side of history, because at the moment they're on the wrong side of history. And, you know, I think we will get through this, Graham. I think we will seize the potential that's been given to us, and I think we will seize the opportunities that have been given to us. I think we will stand up eventually. I mean, we are seeing it. Look what's happening in France at the moment. That's in a full meltdown at the moment. Paris is in a worse revolution. I mean, at least a revolution. They haven't seen this amount of rioting or revolution since the French Revolution. So it's been like 200 years since the people have stood up the way they are in France at the moment. Of course, you're not hearing a lot on the mainstream media about it.
No.
But people have had enough. People are standing up. And I think we're going to see more and more of this from this point forward. I really think so.
Well, it's certainly ramping up, as you say, Max, but going back to what you were saying, and I've heard you use this expression many times in your broadcasts, is by standing by your moral compass. If people must stand by their moral compass. They know what's right, and they know what's wrong. It's pretty bloody simple.
Exactly. It is. That's the thing. You know, we've been taught to obey our legals over our morals, and this is absurd. You know, if legislation is causing you to step outside of your moral compass, you need to question the legislation. You know, and if it's doing it to a severe, you know, an extreme degree, then not only do you need to question legislation, you need to go and arrest the politician that gave you that order if you're a police officer. You need to stand up for your country, stand up for what you and realize the law. If these politicians are telling you that you need to go and oppress the people in order to support the corporate rape of your country, then what are you doing? Mm. What are you doing? All you're doing is condemning your children to a hell on earth, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's absurd, you know? So people have to stop just blindly following orders and destroying their habitat and destroying their people to do so. It's absurd. We've got to wake up to ourselves, and people have to start standing up to these people and calling them out for what they are. And like I said, telling them to get a more ethical job, or, you know, just get a more ethical job, you know, or get another partner, you know, step across the line, break ranks, start supporting the people that you swore to protect rather than supporting the government that's, you know, enslaving the country.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also heard you mention in your last show, Max, I didn't even know there was anything going on down there. It was Venezuela. We hear very little of Yemen. Hardly or anything of Yemen. The last I heard, I think it was probably from you, that there was half the country is starving, and there's, I don't know, how many million without water. Do you know what the situation is? I know you're well up on the Middle East, Max. Do you know what's happening in Yemen? And also, carry on, friend.
I think the bombing campaign may have slowed down a little bit in Yemen, but yeah, there's around about 6 million people without water. I mean, the aggression's still happening. The Saudis are still, you know, carrying it on, but I think it may have slowed down a little bit. It's very, very difficult to get information out of there at the moment, which may indicate that it's actually gotten really, really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But in Yemen is the poorest country in the Middle East as well, and you know, Saudi Arabia is one of the richest countries in the Middle East. It's been supplied with something like £80 billion worth of weapons by the UK in the last 5 years. Plus all the stuff the United States has funneled in there, so it's pretty disgraceful what they're doing.
Certainly is. Like I said, Max, I'd like to ask you a little bit if you can get some information on Venezuela. We'll come to that right after the break, folks. Don't go away. And welcome back to the Graham Hurt Show, ladies and gentlemen. You're on Renegade Broadcasting with my very special guest tonight, Max Egan. Max, just before the break, I was asking you about Venezuela, but we got beat by the advertising, brother.
Yeah, well, the situation in Venezuela is horrendous at the moment. It's pretty well mob rule. I mean, there's some sort of semblance of a body that's claiming to be government, but it's just open slaughter, really. I mean, the people have been protesting that they've got no food and no water and no money and, you know, can we please do something? And so the government's basically just gone all out and it's just sort of slaughtering people. I mean, whole houses, you know, just gangs breaking into houses and just machine gunning whole families, and it's horrendous. It's probably one of the most dangerous places in the world at the moment. and we're not hearing about it on television. We're not hearing about it in the news. I have Venezuelan friends who've got family who are trapped in there. It's a very, very dangerous situation. You know, we're not seeing any public outcry. We're not seeing any talk of peacekeepers or any sort of stabilizing force to go and help these people. You know, we see a picture of a child on the beach, and we go and carpet bomb Syria and create a massive crisis in Europe because of it. But we allow countries like Venezuela to just simply, you know, go down the tube because it suits us to do so. And we just turn a blind eye. It's terrible. It's absolutely horrendous what's going on there at the moment. And like I said, it's just not been covered by the news. It's not been covered by anybody. But there are terrible, terrible reports coming out from of what's happening to the people. They're under a terribly brutal, oppressive regime. Well, basically, a bunch of, like I said, just gangs roaming around and terrorizing the country at the moment. It's horrendous.
Well, Max, I've never heard anyone mention Venezuela but yourself. That's why I asked. There's no semblance of a government there at all.
Well, yeah, there kind of is, but not really. I mean, Chavez died and it kind of melted down and turned to chaos from that point. You know, it was kind of a military junta anyway. And, you know, there are people there that are claiming sort of leadership. But, I mean, it's just chaos. There's no real government. There's no real law in Venezuela anywhere at the moment. It's just an open slaughterhouse, really.
And Chavez was an exceptional man, Max.
Well, you know, there's people that say he was, there's people that say he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't exactly good, but, you know, I don't think he was as bad as what they say. Mm. But, again, I know people in Venezuela who definitely were not happy with Chavez. So, you know, I'm not going to say he was a good guy at all. I don't have any real first-hand knowledge of him. I've heard reports both ways. But, again, the picture that we're posted or given by Western media regarding any of these leaders is usually not true. But like I said, again, I do know people on the ground in Venezuela who will testify that he was simply not a nice man.
Okay, fine. You've done a lot of traveling, Max. I mean, at the moment, I believe you are in Peru, up in the Amazon, yeah?
Yeah, upper Amazon at the moment.
You do get around.
I do, brother. I was in Mexico in January or February, and I was in Philadelphia in April, I was in the UK in May, I was in Amsterdam in May, and now I'm in Peru, yeah.
And
I might be in Spain in a couple of weeks, actually doing some talks over there, so you never know.
Right. And how did you find it as you were traveling, Romax? What was the general feeling of the people?
Look, it was actually really encouraging. It was actually really encouraging going around and seeing people on the ground this time. It was kind of interesting going through the United States and seeing what the situation is like on the ground there, which is terribly bad. And where I went, I mean, I did sort of road trip from Philadelphia through a lot of industrial sort of land, you know, like through Pittsburgh and up through Ohio, up to Lima, Ohio, where there's a big chemical plant and a tank factory and all this sort of stuff. So it was pretty bad the land that I was going through. You know, the roads were in terrible state of disrepair. The place kind of looked like a cross between a dilapidated car yard and a fallen down supermarket. You know, it kind of looked like Mordor, only run by Smurfs on crack, if you can imagine that. That was my impression of the American Midwest, you know, so, pretty horrendous, you know. Yeah, you know, populated by, you know, punctuated by, you know, chemical plants and war factories and shit, you know, so pretty bad stuff, you know. Yeah. But in going through England and seeing, talk to the people in England and talk to the people in Amsterdam and through Europe, and just not people that came to the talks, but just people in the street, people in supermarkets, people in shops, cab drivers, this sort of stuff. Yeah. I like to strike up conversation with these people to find out what their sort of political views are. And every year I go around, I kind of hear these programmed responses from people. But this year when I went around, I started asking questions, leading questions. I found out that every single person I spoke to was dissatisfied with the government, that realized that something's terribly wrong and that we have to start maybe rallying the people to make some sort of a difference. So I'm seeing a huge awakening everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of people that are still asleep. There's a lot of people that are locked into the matrix. But I'm seeing a huge wakefulness in as much as people are realizing that there's a problem now. And that's something I didn't see, like just last year when I traveled, I didn't see this type of response from people. In America, even with all the bad stuff that's going on, there's still an overall sense amongst that something good could happen. There is a sense of freedom in the American people that doesn't exist in too many other countries. The real sense that they are a free people and that they do have control over their governments, probably because they're armed. And, you know, there is that sense of, you know, we're American and we're proud to be that way. And there is a chance that these people are going to stand up and, just say, well, look, we've had enough of these criminals in government and actually do something about it. So, you know, that's something of great hope that I hold for the United States. But overall, I'm seeing, you know, a lot more positive signs than what I was last year when I tour around.
Yeah, I'm hearing more positive things from my, activist friends, or should I say political friends who I discuss with on Facebook pages. They are.
Well, this is of course why they're making things so bad, Graham. Why they're ramping up all this legislation so much, because there's this huge awakening that's happening. And otherwise they wouldn't do it. They'd much prefer to leave things just the way they were and just be sort of bumbling along in this slavery system that the people never knew about. But yeah, now the people know about it. I mean, the internet's been a huge downfall for them. It's been a boon for them in many ways. It's enabled them to find out where all the dissidents are and to be able to pinpoint everybody, but we're not scared. We're not being intimidated by them. Whenever they bring in new legislation and tell us to shut up, we speak louder. You know, so it's just not working for them. So they're freaking out. Of course they are.
And you mentioned France, Max, what's going on in there. Have you any contacts in Germany? And do you know what's going on in Germany? Because I'm hearing there's a lot of trouble there as well, and people are beginning to stand up.
Look, I haven't got any contacts on the ground in Germany. There is one British guy that I know in Germany. Hopefully he's listening to the show and he'll contact me. There's a guy that I met while I was over there in 2014 who is quite aware of what's going on and quite aware of the whole situation in Germany, quite aware of what's going on with the Holocaust and everything. And it'd be nice if he were to contact me. Maybe I'd have some information. But no, I don't have anyone I'm in contact with at the moment on the ground in Germany.
He's welcome to come on my show as well, because I would love to know what's going on out there. The Holocaust, yeah. Maxwell, wow. Where I've been, brother, since we last met, the information, I mean, I've just become a truth is a drug. I can't leave it alone. If I don't learn something new every day, I get pissed off. But the amount of information through my research that I found is just incredible. And again, it started with deprogramming when you mentioned that about, well, maybe we're not getting the truth about World War One, World War Two and Hitler. And one of the first places I seem to have went to was the Holocaust. And it's a complete bloody joke. It's an absolute joke. But the money that's being made, $4 billion a year paid to Israel, which helps them along nicely, and continues to do so. This huge business that they've got and they've built around it is now under serious threat.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's so many things wrong with the official story of the whole hoax. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable that anyone's actually bought into it. I mean, it's Hollywood. It's programming. It's all the stuff that we're presented with. But you know, if you go to the Holocaust Museum in Berlin, I mean, there's no evidence in there. There's a bunch of photographs with captions under them, but that doesn't constitute evidence. It's a photograph with a caption under it, and a photograph of a pile of shoes. Well, I say, well, this is the shoes from the gas chamber. Well, hang on, how do I know it's a photograph of a pile of shoes? It could be shoes from the delousing chambers that they put the wrong caption with, and I would suggest that it is. You know, there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, even if you look at the figures from Auschwitz, which were dropped from 4 million people exterminated to 2 million people exterminated, but then they never dropped the Holocaust figures to compensate for that. If you look at the population figures of the world Jewish population in 1935 and then again in 1945, you see that the world Jewish population actually grew by 2 million people over those 10 years. So you look at the Red Cross figures, they say 271,000 people died in the camps and they weren't all Jews. And most of them died from typhus and all the stuff that the Allies did. So
yeah,
there's absolutely nothing to back up the official version of what happened in World War II. The whole Holocaust story, there's nothing to confirm it. It's propaganda, the whole thing. And it's what Israel has used to get away with what it's doing. And it's how it's managed to infiltrate all governments around the world with what is essentially a Jewish mafia, which is in control of all Western governments. So, yeah, it's time we recognize this and call it out for what it is. I mean, it's all riding on the back of the Holocaust, and the Holocaust is one big, massive lie. And it's a provable lie. You know, and again, it's the one event in history that you're simply not allowed to question. There's actually legislation that prevents you from questioning this in certain countries. You actually go to jail, even saying what I just said in certain countries. I mean, this is thought crime.
Yep.
You know, what is that? I mean, why do they have to legislate to prevent people from talking about this? I mean, truth does not fear investigation. Truth is its own defense. It does not require legislation to back it up. So as soon as they legislate that you can't investigate something, well, the first thing you should do is investigate it. And if they tell you you can't talk about it, then you should talk about it as loudly as possible. To me, that is the best thing to do in these sort of situations. And, folks, the Holocaust is a complete and utter fabrication, and any investigation into it will reveal that fact to be true.
And yet I've got a brother who went to Auschwitz and said, I've been there. Yeah, I said, I've been to Wembley, but I've never played football there. So, you know, stop it. And I went to Amsterdam, Max, not for the Holocaust. I thought I would try out other things there. And I went to the Holocaust Museum. And when you got to the Anne Frank, I don't know if you've been there, but I went to the Holocaust, the Anne Frank house. And as you go up through the building, it's a big show. You start off at the bottom and there's a build-up, a build-up, a build-up until you come to the room, which is actually Anne Frank's room, where she was allegedly held up there for I don't know how long. And the room is freezing, Max. It's a bloody fridge.
It's a fridge, and there's no way that the family could have been up there in that room. I mean, the whole thing is absurd. It really is. And I've been to Auschwitz. I've been to these camps. I've had a look at them. And the gas chambers were built after the war. The chimneys are not attached to the gas chambers. The ovens are not big enough to process the amount of bodies that they said they processed. I've also got all the aerial reconnaissance shots from World War II, which don't show any mass graves anywhere. They would have had to have killed 2,000 people a day from the day the war started till the day the war ended. It's absurd. The figures don't add up. The Enigma code, look at the Enigma code. They monitored all the German communiques. There's no talk of exterminating prisoners. You look at Nick Kollerstrom's work that he's done in breaking the spell. Amazing, amazing work. I mean, anyone who wants to understand the Holocaust needs to go and read Nick's book. It's a great book. And read The Bad War by Mike King. That's another great book. A little bit biased, perhaps, but it's a good book. It gives a good outline of the timeline of what happened from around about 1848 to the end of World War II, how it was all laid out. I mean, World War I and World War II were essentially the one war, just a big lull in the middle, you know. But
in the middle, the NACMA.
Yeah, they were very, very connected. They were very related to each other. But essentially nothing we've been told about World War II is true. All the Jews that were rounded up on trains and taken to camps, most of this happened in 1933 for the transfer agreement. They were all shipped down to Israel, and all their assets were transferred down there as well in the transfer agreement. You can buy a book on that by Edwin Black, a Jewish scholar, which tells the whole story. You look at Ilan Pappe's ethnic cleansing of Palestine. There's so many things to, ways of discovering the truth of what happened. And there's so many things to disprove the concept of the Holocaust, not the least of which is the fact that the Jews mentioned this figure 258 times between 1900 and 1945. They claimed that the 6 million Jews died in World War I. They held a memorial service for them in 1916, these Jews who never died in World War I. They claimed again that there were 6 million Jews facing extermination in Russia in 1921. They claimed again in 1927. Like, they've been claiming this figure for 50, 60 years before they got anyone to believe it. And they only got anyone to believe it after they took over world media, and they've been promoting it and pushing it into the minds of the people ever since. I mean, we get a new Holocaust movie almost every year, and every week in the newspapers, sometimes every day, there'll be some reference to the Holocaust. Just some reference. Oh, Holocaust survivors said such and such, or such and such reminded them of the camps in Germany, or whatever, you know. And there are currently 7 million Holocaust survivors receiving reparation from Germany. How many people survived these camps? This is 60, 70 years after the event. Yeah. And there's what? Still 7 million Holocaust survivors. If they were death camps, how did these 7 million people survive? How many people did they liberate from these camps? How many Jews were there in the world at the time, for God's sake?
Well, there were only 90 million across the whole of Europe, Max.
Exactly. So, and according to newspapers, there were 600,000 Jews in Germany in 1933. So how did that figure suddenly become 6 million by 1945? Mm. You know, it doesn't make sense at all.
They really have, they're not even doors open for us.
Well, yeah, they've done a number on everybody, but it's time we called it and stop being afraid to call it.
Exactly.
Because, you know, the whole war on terror, this whole police state, everything's riding on the back of this event, because these are who is controlling all Western governments, these people who staged this Holocaust event. It's a hoax. The whole thing's a hoax.
And all for the benefit of Israel, Max.
Well, to a degree. I don't think Israel will survive. I really don't. I think the Jewish people have been hung out to dry just as much as anybody else. You know, and the people of Israel are fully programmed to do what they do. You can't hate them for it. They're born into this ridiculous ideology, this victim mentality. I mean, Jewish people are a victim of, they all suffer from pre-traumatic stress disorder, you know, because they're taught that they're victims before they are. And they go out in the world and believing they must defend themselves against everybody because everybody hates them, when it isn't true. People dislike them because of their aggressive actions that they undertake, because they believe everybody hates them, because they're programmed into this pre-traumatic stress disorder, you know.
Which is created by, I remember the first time you mentioned about circumcision, Max. Again, that was in Deprogramming the Collective. And the room sort of went silent. Well, you can't be talking about foreskins, you know. But looking at it, as you said, it is left with the first act of aggression against your body.
Well, it is, and it's also done at a very early age, like on the sixth day, and you've got a young child who is just experiencing reality. He's experiencing the sounds and seeing light for the first time, and the sound of his mother's voice and the taste of his mother's milk, and just learning how to feel, and just learning, and very, very open to taking it all in. And then suddenly he's subject to this horrible pain in his foreskin being removed, and this becomes his reality, and it disconnects him from the right brain. It shuts down his creative impulses, it shuts down his creative centers, it shuts down his long term memory, and it makes him perfectly open for programming. It also disconnects him from any bond that he may have with his spouse later, because it removes the male of the most active pleasure center of his body. The foreskin contains more blood vessels than the entire human body combined. And there's an electrical connection that happens between the foreskin and the brainstem of a woman during sex. And this may say, oh yes, we know that, ha ha ha. Yes, but no, there truly is. There's this electromagnetic connection that happens, which causes a bonding. So we have a race of unbonded males who are disconnected from their creative centers, and disconnected from their long-term memory centers, and are very, very easily programmable. And this is all from the removal of the foreskin. This is a very, very deliberate act. And it's something that needs to stop. This genital mutilation needs to stop, because it's a lot of what has caused people to become so programmed. And it's a hard thing for people to deal with, you know, but it's the truth.
And people are being actually paid. They sort of get bonuses if they can get the foreskin off. I believe in America, they're absolutely trained to push this upon parents, and parents feel, well, this famous expression, doctors knows best, they'll go along with it, which is it's exasperating the problem.
Well, exactly. I mean, and it's all done by design, and it's all this ridiculous ritual, which is, you know, designed for a specific purpose. You know, we're told it's for aesthetic reasons, but it's really done for a specific purpose.
And how it's done as well, Max, by the rabbi, the actual.
Well, by the rabbi, I mean they get down and bite it off.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. So they're basically delivering oral sex to a young boy, biting it off with their teeth, or using a rusty nail, or something. They do it in the most horrendous way, so as to cause the most pain. You know, and this absolutely disconnects the people and makes them easily programmable, which is of course perfect for the Israeli doctrine and the Jewish doctrine, you know, to get these people locked into this pre-traumatic stress disorder that they all suffer, you know.
Yeah, and in Israel, as you say, it's very much a program thing. Who are these people? What would they be like if they were left to their own inherent devices? As much, I believe, a figure I heard, I don't know if it's accurate, I've got no point from where it came from, but I did hear the figure that 89% of Israelis are death to Arabs, but there's still 11% there that can think for themselves and are fighting it. And we don't see them. We never see those people who make the protest in Israel.
Well, no, we don't. We very often don't. But it's an interesting thing. I mean, the whole Jewish question is just a really interesting thing because, you know, people will be in Israel and they won't say they're Israeli. They'll say, I'm Jewish, but I don't support what the state of Israel is doing. But what the state of Israel is doing, I mean, Zionism in itself, really, this is ultra-extremist Judaism, really, is what it is. If you really want to look at it, you really want to look at what's written in the Talmud and the Torah, and so it's horrendous, some of this stuff, you know. It's very, very supremacist ideology. And Zionism is really Judaism taken to an extreme. Yeah. So, you know, I try to differentiate between the two because I don't wish to alienate people, but, I mean, look at books such as Shlomo Sand's Invention of the Jewish People. Look at the history of the Khazars and all this sort of stuff, and you realize that the Jewish people, this is a faith. Even in that newspaper in 1933 that I mentioned earlier when I said there were 600,000 Jews in Germany in 1933, that paper referred to them and it said that Jews around the world are banding together in defense of their co-religionists.
Yes.
So it named them as co-religionists back in 1933. It didn't name them as a race of people. It named them as co-religionists. So to be Jewish is to follow the Judaic faith. It's to be, you know, of the Judaic religion. So if you are standing against what the state of Israel is doing, you're standing against Zionism, why are you calling yourself Jewish? Because if you support the Jewish faith, then you support the supremacist ideology outlined by the Jewish faith. If you're going to call yourself Jewish, then you must support that faith, must you not? Why don't you just call yourself an Israeli? You know, because if you're going to abandon your religion and say it's the religion that's the problem and I'm just an Israeli and I want peace, then be an Israeli and want peace. But don't claim yourself as Jewish. You know, if I was a Muslim and I was going to abandon my faith, if I was a Palestinian Muslim and I was going to abandon my faith and simply stand up for, as a faithless person, and as a human being, I would not still call myself a Muslim. I would call myself a Palestinian. You know, so if you're Jewish, why are you still calling yourself Jewish if you're not supporting the faith? You know what I'm saying? The problem is that many of the Jewish people have been programmed into believing that there is a Jewish race.
Yes.
But there is not a Jewish race. It's a faith. It's not a race. Most Jews are Arabs who follow the Jewish faith. If you tell them that, they'll want to cut your head off. But look at them. Some of them, a great majority of them, are Semites. I mean, a great majority of them aren't Semites. A great majority of them are European Khazars who've taken up the Jewish faith. But a lot of the people who live in Israel are Semitic. They are Middle Eastern people. They've got dark skin. They've got brown eyes. They've got black hair. You know, these are Arabic people who follow the Jewish faith. Yeah. The same as there are Arabic people who follow the Muslim faith. But if they come from that Middle Eastern area, that Semitic area, then they are Semites. I mean, you look at Christ and all this. Christ was an Arabic man. He was a Palestinian who was born in Galilee, who apparently became a Jew and was named King of the Jews or whatever, but he was a Palestinian.
Yeah.
You know, so you can be a Palestinian and be a Jew. You can be a Palestinian and be a Muslim. You can be a Palestinian and be a Christian. How come you can't be an Israeli and be a Muslim or a Christian or whatever? You know, if you're an Israeli with a citizen, you know, and you've got the rights of the people, the rights come with Judaism, not with being an Israeli citizen. You can be an Israeli citizen and have no rights in Israel. But you've got to be a Jewish national to have rights in Israel. So how can you be a Jewish national if it's not a people, it's a religion? It's a really complex issue, but it's one that Jewish people find very hard to deal with because of the programming. I know Jewish people in Australia who don't identify with their faith but still call themselves Jewish. And I say to them, well, why if you don't follow the faith? And they say, well, because the line is that if your mother's Jewish, then you are Jewish. And if you don't adhere to that, then I'm betraying my race. I have to adhere to it, otherwise our race will perish. And this is the guilt complex they hold because of the Holocaust that's programmed into them. So even he, as a white guy with dreadlocks who's married to a Venezuelan shaman woman, he still identifies himself as Jewish because of the program that he holds, because he believes he has to. Otherwise, it will mean the end of his race. And the rest of his family, these are strict Talmudic Jews. They wear the little hats and the suits and the whole thing. They think he's a complete outcast, even with the way he thinks, even though he still adheres to being a Jew, you know. And I try to explain to him, and I've explained to him about the Khazars as well. He was amazed when I told him about the Khazars. He's going, oh, this can't be true. And I'm saying, well, actually,
you're white, so you're probably of Khazar descent. And he's just going, oh, this is outrageous, you know. And he spoke to a friend about it who is a Jew who left Israel. He's an Israeli guy. He's a Jew. He left Israel, didn't want to be part of the army, didn't want to be part of anything, renounced his faith, calls himself an Israeli, not a Jew. And my friend put it to him, and he said, oh, yeah. I said, oh, yeah, I'm a Khazar too. Our family, we know all about it. We've kept the traditions alive, and we've passed it down, so we know what real history is. Yeah, all us white so-called Jews are all Khazars. That's why I renounced the faith and left Israel, you know, and really surprised my friend that there was a so-called Jew who knew the story as much as I did. So it's just an interesting program that they have, how they are kind of committed to adhere to this faith race because they're programmed to do it, even though inside they kind of know it's not true. It's just programmed to do it. It's really interesting, you know.
It's very difficult to break. And welcome back to the last segment of the Graham Hart Show, ladies and gentlemen, here on Renegade Broadcasting with my special guest tonight, Max Egan. Max, as we're into the last segment now, we've got about 20-odd minutes left or 25 minutes left. There's no way I could do an interview with you without mentioning Palestine. You've brought Palestine into the hearts of many people, me included. I had a little row with a fellow host, not a row, just with a friendly discussion to say, look, you're not posting enough stuff on Facebook about the Palestine situation. It is, as you've said before, Max, our greatest opportunity. But you've been there. You know what's going down probably more than any other activist in the world. So if you could, if you want to expand on Palestine, please.
Look, the situation there, it's truly the greatest moral dilemma of our time. And it's related to all issues on the earth. It really is. It's an ongoing crisis. It's been going on for like 68 years now. And look, sure, we see humanitarian issues all over the world. You know, what's going on in Tibet, what's going on in Venezuela, everywhere. We're seeing it all over the place. But, you know, each one of these issues, is a kind of a separate issue. You can look at the issue in Tibet. You can try to deal with it, but it's very difficult to do. There's no way that you can really affect any real change there. There's no way you can really affect what's going on in Venezuela until you can identify that most of the worlds that we've got, most of the problems we've got on this world come from legislation, and that all of the politicians who are enacting this legislation are all supporting the situation that's going on in Palestine and Israel, which is an open war crime. So it gives us an opportunity to, like I said, if there's going to be any law at all on this earth, then it must apply to all. And the situation in Gaza, the fact that Gaza Strip exists, this is a breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. It's an open war crime. Therefore, every politician that supports it can be arrested right now for war crimes, and all the corrupt legislation that these criminals have rolled out can be rolled back under their own law. You know, if law's going to mean anything, we can do that. And if we don't do this, then there is no law. There is no law, and the only hope the world will have will be to lapse into a revolution, which would be ugly. We don't want a global revolution. We don't want the hardship and suffering that's going to come with it. So to me, it's an issue that could be used to heal the world. If we can open up our hearts to the kids in Gaza, to the kids in Palestine, and realize that this is a humanitarian situation more than a political situation or an ethnic situation or religious situation. It's a humanitarian situation, and it's an open war crime. There is such a thing as international law, and it is supposed to mean something. So why don't we use that? Why don't we stand up and call it for what it is? I mean, look at America. You've got, you know, so much horrendous legislation being rolled out on the people in the United States and in England by the Cameron regime. But David Cameron and Barack Obama and all these politicians in America, they all support Israel. I mean, every politician in America has to sign the AIPAC treaty in order to even get funding to run for office. And the AIPAC treaty pledges allegiance. The AIPAC pledge pledges allegiance to the state of Israel. So you've got every politician running for office in the United States has to pledge allegiance to the state of Israel in order to even get funding to run for office in the United States. What's that about? And that's treason right there. That's treason. And when you look at the actions of Israel, it's in breach of Article 33 of the Geneva Convention. So all these politicians have pledged to support this breach of international law, this war crime. So they're all war criminals under their own law. So you know, it's a situation we can use. And if you go to Palestine and you go and look at what's really going on there, nothing that you're being told about this is true, is real. Now, Israel is an aggressive force. It's a terrorist state. It's been oppressing and terrorizing these people for decades upon decades with your tax dollars, and we're not doing anything about it. And Gaza Strip, you know, it's an imprisoned, impoverished population besieged for 10 years now. 10 years they've been under siege, or 9 years they've been under siege now, I think, 10 years in 2017. And you go there, it's 25 miles long, 4.5 miles wide, 1.8 million people, and the average age in Gaza is 17. And it's a population of children, for God's sake, being terrorized by one of the most powerful militaries on earth by all of your tax dollars. You know, America funds this country to the tune of $7 million a day, you know, like $1 or $2 billion a year going in there from the United States. And the United States is in a state of utter disrepair, trillions of dollars in debt fighting Israeli wars. You know, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And the people in Palestine are holding out as much as they can, as long as they can. They're being terrorized in West Bank. They're being just deprived and starved out of slow killing in Gaza. In West Bank, it's horrendous. The Jewish settlers, Jewish extremist settlers are marching through there today, through Al-Quds in Jerusalem today, on the eve of Ramadan, you know, the Arab day of celebration, Muslim day of celebration. So right in the midst of this, you've got these extremist Jewish settlers marching through Al-Quds, holding Jewish flags, basically celebrating Jewish occupation, celebrating Jewish terrorism, celebrating the fact that Israel refuses to recognize Palestine's right to exist. This is happening right now, you know, as we're having this broadcast, they're marching through Jerusalem right now. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're doing it just to try to provoke the Palestinian people into some sort of response, so then they can say, oh, look, this is what Ramadan is. It's a violent celebration against Israel, you know. I mean, Israel is a horribly deceptive, aggressive force, and it's been terrorizing these people for years, and it has to stop. And if we do not recognize the human tragedy, the potential that it has to the entire world, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. That's the way it is. We see Palestine as a system of warehouse supplying human beings, and it's going to be brought to every country on earth, and indeed it already is. We're seeing it behind these austerity measures and everything they're doing. It's all time to bring these measures to the Western world, and we have to call it. You know, if you heal the fracking, the coal seam gas mining in your country, if you want to heal what's happening in Venezuela, which has all been financed and funded by Western interests as well. All of these problems are all from legislation that's put in place by governments, and all of these governments are in open support of this war crime. You call this war crime out for what it is. You can stop the coal seam gas mining in your country. You can stop the austerity measures in your country. You can stop all the problems that are happening in Australia by identifying the fact that Malcolm Turnbull and his entire government support the state of Israel in their open war crimes. Same as the government of the United States, same as the government of England, same as Germany, same as France. All of these governments are openly corrupt under their own legislation, and Palestine is the key that can pull all of these governments down in one fell swoop. Now, you can't get that from Venezuela. You can't get that from Tibet. There isn't any other issue on the earth that you can identify which you can link to all politicians in the Western world that are carrying out all these crimes. The only issue you can use to do that is Palestine, and it stands as a non-debatable point under international law. They can't even debate this, you know. I mean, if you're supporting the state of Israel and you're inflicting legislation upon me, how is your legislation valid when it can be shown that you're a proven war criminal, which it can? So how is your legislation valid? Especially when you're claiming to get that power from me. You're claiming I've delegated powers to you that I don't have, and you're standing in open support for crimes, and you're claiming to have authority? Is this a joke?
Yeah.
Do we have a legal system at all? Because if we do, according to this legal system, you're a freaking criminal. You know, and if you're going to inflict your legislation on me, if you're going to say you're a paper-based reality, all this bullshit that you write on paper, you inflict on my life, if you're going to say that I have to abide by any of this paper-based reality, okay, fine, I can do a paper-based reality, because here's a piece of paper that says you're and you inflict on me is invalid. So let's address that point before we can go down of establishing whether your legislation is valid. And this goes to every politician in the United States, every politician in Australia, in France, in Germany, in any country that is supporting the rogue terrorist state of Israel. Because this state was founded on terrorism, it was built on a lie, and it's about time the people of the world grew a backbone and stood up and called it
it out for what it is and reclaim this earth for the home of mankind and stop letting these criminals run it into the fucking ground, because that's what they're doing. Yeah. And they're going to continue doing it if we don't stand up and call it. And Palestine is a key. It's a golden opportunity for mankind to step into their humanity and do something about this situation.
Well, I want to put out a call to all the people that follow you, Max, and there's many, many thousands of them that do. I would like to appeal to those people who praise your work. I would like to appeal to those people to put more posts on Facebook every day about Palestine, because from what I'm seeing, a lot of people say, great stuff, Max, but are you, listener, are you who follow Max's wonderful work, are you posting on Palestine? Are you putting this stuff out? Because there's no good Max doing it and we not follow it up. I post regularly on Palestine. It's very close to my heart. And I think, you know, it's up to us to get this stuff out. I don't think, Max, I have to say that the alt media is not doing nowhere near enough to realize that the opportunity that the Palestinians are giving us, and they are the greatest freedom fighters in the world.
They are, and the problem is people don't realize the opportunity that it provides. They're scared of the label of anti-Semitism, and they just think, oh yeah, Palestine. They're not from a legal perspective. And look, I think law is fiction, but this proves law is fiction. This shows that people, that there is no law on this planet that has any validity at all. You know, and it's about time we stood up and called it. It's a huge opportunity for us. And look, I've been there and I've met the people, and having gone there and met them, I simply cannot turn my back on these people. These are some of the most beautiful people I've ever met in my life. I really cannot stress that enough. You know, the children, the light in the eyes of these people, the giving, caring nature of these people, and they are suffering so badly due to the inaction of the world. And it is an incredibly important issue, and it is an issue that could literally heal the world if people would just give it the attention that it deserves.
I totally agree.
And look, we don't have much time to do it either, Graham. We really don't, because the situation there is horrendous. And in another 5 years, I mean, it's doubtful Palestine will even exist if we don't pay attention to it. I mean, there's like 10% of the water in Gaza is now drinkable, and they're just going hell for leather in West Bank. The people in West Bank, you know, parents are too scared to let their children even go outside and play in the yard for fear that they'll be shot by Israeli snipers. You know, 15-year-old girls getting shot at checkpoints claiming knife attack, you know, 10 Israeli, armed Israeli soldiers sitting around, one girl sitting on the ground, they shoot her in the head and claim knife attack. It's a joke, you know. Just because she's a Palestinian, it's ridiculous. And Israel is also, there's over 6,000 people that are held in jail without charge or trial. They kill one Palestinian child every 3 days for the last 13 years. They've kidnapped or arrested 5 Palestinian children every day for the last 48 years. And you find that Israel is also the largest seller of human organs in the world. Where are they getting all these organs from? Probably from the Palestinians that they arrest, you know, and this has to stop. And we have to start calling it out. And if your government is supporting this terrorist rogue state, stop supporting your government, folks. Stop supporting anybody who's speaking out against this rogue state and start making some noise about it yourself. Because if you don't, then your children aren't going to have a future, because it's the people that are running this criminal state that are running your country as well. And look, the problem isn't the Jews. The problem is who controls the state. And this all goes back to the banking cartels, really, if you ask me. That's another issue we could get into on another show. I mean, that's a whole show. Yeah. But really, the legal opportunity that this provides to expose this whole legal system as being the fiction that it is, this legal opportunity that Palestine provides is unprecedented. It's unparalleled by any other situation that we face on the earth, and it really is important that people give this the attention that it deserves.
Absolutely. And I believe Brother Ken O'Keefe is trying to do something, Max, through the legal system. I don't know a lot about it, and I know he's got to play his cards very close to his chest, but I believe he is looking to take on the legal system in some way. Is there any way that we can do this by taking on the system? In like writing to our own MPs, but is there any way we can go further than that?
I think the first step is in public awareness, in asking these questions in a public enough manner. You know, if your government is presenting legislation to you that you don't like, go to a council meeting or go to a public rally and stand up and call it and ask them how the legislation is valid, if it could be shown that this legislation is being enacted by a provable war criminal, which it can. Mm. Ask that question in a public enough way and ask them to show cause why they shouldn't be investigated for supporting war crimes, and why we shouldn't be questioning the validity of their legislation due to the fact that they are a provable war criminal by their support for a state that is currently in breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. And if law is going to mean anything, it must apply to all. Can you show cause why it should not apply to you? Ask that question publicly, as loudly as you can, in front of as many people as you can, as often as you can, for every issue that you're facing, and see what happens.
Well, I do agree with you entirely on we are running out of time with regards to Palestine. People sort of are aware to some degree, though it's all lies, via the West Bank. The one thing that that comes to mind, Max, is this: these rockets that allegedly Palestine sends over, that, you know, if they hit you, they'll kill you. If they miss you by the thickness of a cigarette paper, they won't harm you at all. Why would the Palestinians send over rockets of any type to know they're going to get the bomb the shit out of by the fourth largest army in the world?
No, I reckon most of them are sent over by Mossad. I really do. I mean, when you're in the thick of battle or war, when Israel's bombing them, then, you know, they're the only defense that Palestinians have got. That's their only artillery, if that's what you want to even call it.
Yeah.
You know, that's all they've got to defend themselves with, these Qassam rockets. But most of them, I think, are sent over by Israel. I think Mossad agents go in there, or elements within Hamas that are working or sympathizing with Mossad. They just send them over to give Israel the excuse to go and terrorize the people a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wonder if they're infiltrated.
Everything's infiltrated, Graham.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't see the logic in sending them over. Okay, I can understand when Gaza is under attack, but to send them over when they're not under attack, why the hell would you do that?
Yeah, just to provoke an attack. So exactly. You've got to ask the question, who's really doing this?
Absolutely. I think we pretty much covered Palestine, Max, that we can, as much as we can do, and we do really need to push it as much as we can. I appeal to all listeners, please, if you're on Facebook or wherever you are, get the stuff out there about what's happening to Palestine every day. There's enough of it there, and people are saying, it's too many people are saying, yeah, that's good. I mean, that's a very good point. Share it, for Christ's sake. You only got to click the button to say share, and, you know, we can get this out to a lot more people than what we're actually doing at the moment. And I say that not only to the listener, but I say it to all radio hosts as well. Palestine is the great opportunity, and we have to grab it.
Yeah, but the problem is a lot of Facebook. I mean, a lot of the Facebook stuff I post, it just doesn't come off on people's feeds. They have to physically go and look at my page. And even when they go and look at my page, often they won't see it unless they click refresh on the page. So, you know, there's certain algorithms that are put in place. And I've even got a bit annoyed sometimes. I've posted on Facebook looking at why aren't you sharing this stuff? Because I've got 5,000 friends here. You know, if you all shared, if you even got one person each, tomorrow we could have 10,000 people that have this information. And we could spread it that way. And I've actually got a little frustrated sometimes with people's lack of sharing. But I realize that there's algorithms that are in place that people simply don't see the stuff. They don't see the posts. They don't see the information. So, and you know, we're kept in this state of constant distraction. We're kept in this state where our memories are all shot to pieces. So, you know, you can't really blame people, but it would be great if people shared it. There's also a video that I made, which you can find on thecrowhouse.com, just down on my homepage, called Save Gaza, Save the World, A Message to Humanity. You'll find it on YouTube as well. If you could share that video with as many people as you can, that may help things as well.
When did you put that out, Max?
I put that out probably close to 6 months or a year ago.
Well, I don't think I've seen it, brother.
Never. Yeah, well, it's
it shows Facebook, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just shows how it goes, mate. It shows that information doesn't get shared, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now you're down in Peru. We're sadly running quickly out of time, Max. We're talking about less than 10 minutes now. I know that one thing I would love to try, but I wouldn't do it until I got the opportunity, but is you have done ceremony with ayahuasca, which fascinates me. And I know a lot of people have had bad experience as well, because they go to the wrong places, they see the wrong people, they end up getting raped, etc. But looking at the actual experience that you've had with ayahuasca, could you explain that in a little bit more detail, what happened with you?
Look, ayahuasca, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I mean, every journey that I've had has been different, but it's a way of reconnecting yourself to this earth. It's a way of getting a crash course in reality. That's kind of why the shaman have come out of the forest and have been presenting this to people, just so that people can start to reconnect a little bit. They realize that, you know, if they don't start sharing this information with people, then Western culture is basically going to destroy the world. It's going to destroy the planet. It's going to, you know, basically destroy the forests and everything. So they need to pay attention to it. So they've kind of come out of the jungle to show people. And that's really what it's about. But the journeys I've had have been very interesting. I mean, it's a very internal experience. It's something that you can't really tell people what may happen. It's a very internal thing. No one can really guide you through the experience. It's about self-discovery, really. Ayahuasca will peel away the layers of your personality like an onion and show you the self that you don't really want to see, perhaps, but it'll help you look at it.
Well, it's a medicine. And,
well, it is. It's a medicine. It's a very healing medicine. And but, you know, people can see a dark side of themselves that maybe they don't want to face, and sometimes they can have a bad experience. But, again, it depends on the place that you go as well. I mean, you are in a vulnerable state when you're in the medicine, and people can take advantage of you if you're not in the right right place with a, you know, reputable people. So it is good that people go to, you know, a reputable place and do it with people that they trust, you know.
Well, I had a friend of mine who did ceremony, and she said that you can see Mother Earth in three forms, either that of a snake, a bird, a large eagle-type bird that you would probably know, Max, and also a black lady with diamonds in her face. And the other thing that comes to mind that she said, that she spoke with her grandmother for an hour and a half. You still there?
What was that, brother? Sorry, I missed that.
That's okay. A friend of mine done ayahuasca ceremony, and she spoke... she spoke with her grandmother for an hour and a half. She's seen Mother Earth, who shows herself as either an eagle or anaconda, something like that, a snake, or a black lady with braid hair and diamonds and emeralds sort of in her face.
Yeah, well, I've actually seen that same vision of a lady with diamonds or emeralds in her face. So interesting that people see similar visions, which indicates that what you're seeing in these ayahuasca journeys is actually into the spirit. It's not really hallucinations, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I saw visions of a large face with emeralds or diamonds, diamond-shaped emeralds started all over her face. And I've actually seen a painting of that as well, which I saw after I did ceremony. So, yeah, it is quite interesting. I think what happens during ceremony is that higher senses and higher faculties come online. You can see into the spirit realms. You can make connections with your ancestors and all sorts of stuff. So I think it's highly beneficial for people to do. I really do.
Well, I would certainly like the chance to do it personally. Whether that'll happen, well, we wait and see. The other last point I wanted to make, Max, was I know you've had great success with hemp oil and curing cancer and other diseases as well. If you'd like to just explain to the listeners how you your experience with using this, and you've actually cured your own skin cancer as well.
Yeah, I cured skin cancer on my back with one application of psychoactive cannabis oil. I've had incredible results. You know, with people that have had stomach cancer, testicular cancer, throat cancer, all sorts of stuff. You know, cannabis oil will cause cancer to basically commit suicide, will cause cancer cells to eat themselves. It's highly beneficial. This is one of the reasons it was banned. You know, when they banned cannabis, we started getting sick. We saw all sorts of exotic diseases come into play. You know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all sorts of stuff we never had before. And I think it's been hugely detrimental to the human race to have this plant banned. You know, you've got an endocannabinoid system in your body, which indicates that you've had a long symbiotic relationship with this plant. You know, and we're supposed to be using this plant as our companion plant. There isn't any other plant that you have an endocrine system in your body for, only this plant. So that should speak volumes to people. This plant should never have been outlawed. It's killed zero people in over 10,000 years of recorded use. its outlawing has caused a huge amount of problems for our environment through the destructive industries and pollutive industries that have come about to compensate for the banning of this plant, and also through our health. So it's about time we called that out for what it is as well. These politicians are corrupt, they're criminals. This plant was banned under false pretenses, and it's about time we just reinstated it to its natural position of a plant with no legislation surrounding it at all. We should be free to use this plant for all of its purposes, and I don't believe that there is any recreational use for it personally. I think that all the uses are therapeutic and medicinal, and that there should be no legislation surrounding it at all. We need to just start growing it and using it immediately. And any politicians that protest against that or make their demands need to be removed from office. It's as simple as that.
And it really is a creative instrument as well, Max. Me personally, all my songwriting came from using smoking weed. It's never done. And of course, as you said, I heard you say before that they're afraid for people to take it because it'll open their eyes to what's really going on.
Yeah, exactly. As they say, you know, weed it causes people to become maladjusted to society. And, you know, that's what happens. But as Judy Krishnamurti said, it's no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. So, you know, it wakes people up to the cesspool they're swimming in, and that's why they don't like people smoking it, you know. But more than that, it's a healing plant. You know, if you juice the leaves and consume it on a regular basis, it keeps you healthy, and they really don't want that. Plus it cures diseases, which cancels out the pharmaceutical industry.
And what it does industrially, Max?
Oh, yeah, it does all sorts of stuff, mate. It's the best quality concrete, the best quality plastics, the best quality clothing, the best quality papers. I mean, all sorts of things. Yeah, it could wipe out some of the most pollutive industries on the planet were it made illegal, and some of the most profitable industries as well, and that should be a bit of a sign for people.